I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Sarah Nalis. She's director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute, and Joanne Smoger, who does events and outreach work there. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
So, Farmers Market, we always talk about you guys in the summer. What's happening in the winter?
Well, there's a lot going on. We're one of the few markets that has a year-round market. So the Saturday market is now running from 8 to 1 every single Saturday in the market hall. And it's an amazing market. There's tons of food there. There's greens year-round. There's meat. There's pastries. There's dried goods, dried chili, lots of root vegetables. It's really a very thriving market in the middle of winter. So people
now,
should come down.
Yeah, I mean, in the summer, there's multiple locations. Is that true in the winter as well?
Well, the wintertime, it sort of reduces down to just Saturdays, and it's really a function of how much food there is available to sell at the market. As the season progresses and more food starts coming in, usually by May, we start the Tuesday market, which is at the market hall, and then in the middle of the summer in July, there's a Southside market. And again, it's just a reflection of the bounty that starts to come in during the summertime.
During the harvest season.
Right.
So the greens that we have in the winter are grown in greenhouses?
Yes, they are under row covers for a while. Remember how it was really warm for a long time in the fall?
Until it got ridiculously cold.
Until it got freezing, exactly. So they were able to keep production up under row covers. But now, yeah, they're in greenhouses, and we've got a micro-lending program at the Institute, which has helped a lot of farmers fund the construction of greenhouses so that they can bring in crops year-round. And it's been very successful. We've done over $330,000 in loans to about 100 applicants. And it's all for things like greenhouses and, you know, planting new trees, doing orchards. So the part of the Institute's work is to try to expand production in the shoulder season so that more food can come into the market through this micro-lending program.
So that's a lot. No wonder you guys are busy all year round.
Yeah, it's a very busy market. Also in the wintertime, the market organization itself looks at its rules again, and they send out the application packages to the 150 farm families that want to be a part of the market every year. So the wintertime is really when a lot of the work of the market happens, the committee work and all that kind of stuff.
Now, do you have to apply to be a part of the farmers market? How does that work?
Every year, the vendors have to do a brand new application to the market. And because one of our hallmarks is that we want people to sell what they grow and not resell things from, you know, other places, is we want to know what they're planting.
Is that a problem?
No, but some farmers markets allow reselling. And we don't really want to because we want to focus on local economic development in the northern part of the state. So part of the rules of the market are that we want the person who's grown the food to bring it to the market and sell it so that we can establish relationships between the community and the grower. And the application process asks them to put down what they're going to grow when they think it's going to come to their table so that we can kind of keep an eye on, you know, making sure that they're not reselling cherries from Walmart, for example.
Right. I mean, a farmer's market like this isn't just about having a market for farmers, it's really about a whole new food system, basically.
Yeah, you know, our market is interesting. It's been around since the late 60s, so we're actually, I guess, around 45 years old now. And originally it started, you know, with six vendors who were from the north who, you know, back in those days people would go door to door to sell their fruit or their chili. They'd have to encounter dogs and fences and sometimes unfriendly neighbors and stuff. So they started selling in the parking lot at St. Anne's Church. And we were one of the very, I think, you know, first markets probably in the country. Back then, I think now there's over 7,000 farmers markets nationwide.
Good heavens.
But I think, yeah, our market has a philosophy behind it that we want to promote local growing, keeping people on the land, the, you know, reflection of our cultural traditions, which are found in agriculture, the fact that we want people to grow the food locally and bring it to market so that we can build relationships between the urban and rural people of our region. So there's a lot actually going on behind the scenes, you know, aside from just the beauty of an amazing market selling fresh local food.
So there are also other things going on, like the movie series.
Indeed, the movie series. This is our eighth year of the movie series. We build a theater within the Market Pavilion, and we do it once a month, January through May.
And it's on Wednesday nights?
It's on Wednesday nights.
So that's tonight.
That's tonight. Tonight we're going to show a film, Climate Refugees. Climate Refugees is a real interesting film. It's won many, many awards, and it's really how, through climate change, millions of people are being displaced from their homes, and what are the implications of that related to the health of those folks and where they're moving to, economics. It's considered a national threat to security, especially in the future as millions more will be displaced, all because of too much or too little water.
Right.
And that's the impact, and those are the discussions. We have speakers after the film. Those are the discussions that we'll have, because the water issue in particular is critical to our area. So the movie touches upon what's happening in Bangladesh and the island of Tuvalu, but also what happened in New Orleans when all those folks had to leave en masse.
Exactly. And these are all human-caused problems, and not only is it a security problem and an economic problem, but it's just a huge cultural loss.
Absolutely.
I mean, just in New Orleans, when all those people left home, you don't recreate that culture somewhere else on an individual basis.
Exactly. And that's what this film does. It shows the human face of climate change. It tells the stories. So you really get to experience it, you know, as firsthand as you can. And, you know, we do want to get the word out to the community. I mean, these films are not only really current and award-winning films. We want people to know about the issues, but then how it relates locally, and that's why we invite the speakers afterwards. They relate to what's happening locally. So we're going to have someone from the Watershed Association come. We're going to have several people for this film. And I just want to let the listeners know that we also offer food at these films, and it's part of the admission price.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Our volunteers, we have a great group of volunteers, and they usually make the food, or we get the food donated.
Is it like fresh farmers market food?
Well, tonight we're going to do soups. We're going to do cheeses donated from some of our vendors, and we have fresh bread donated from Sage Bakehouse.
Awesome.
But the volunteers are making all the different soups.
We're talking to Joanne Smoger and Sarah Noss of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute. Now, what is the Farmers Market Institute as opposed to the Farmers Market?
The short story is that we're the nonprofit arm of the Santa Fe Farmers Market.
Ah.
Santa Fe Farmers Market is famous in a way in that it's a farmer-run organization. They have farmers on their board who determine the governance of the market. But unfortunately for the IRS, that's a little bit too cozy of a relationship to give them nonprofit status.
Okay.
So the market created a freestanding sister organization, the Farmers Market Institute. And our mission is to support the farmers market by looking at some of the you know, bigger problems that surround the market, the issue of water, land prices, doing economic development, supporting farmers in the development of their business so that we can bring more food into the city.
Now, land prices, I mean, that must be a central issue for farmers who could perhaps make more money selling their land than cultivating it.
Yeah, it's huge in the north, especially. There was a farm, the old Seeds of Change farm is up in Ulrike, which is near San Juan Pueblo. I think that was a 14-acre farm. It was on the market for $1.2 million.
Good heavens.
So it's not really possible for a New Mexico farmer, really of, you know, over 60% of our farmers make about $10,000 or less from farming in New Mexico. So this issue of land prices, as our farmers age and we need more farmers to come into the area to farm, they're not going to be able to afford getting on the land. And we started in 2009 a group called the Small Agricultural Land Conservation Initiative, SALSI, where we were working with the land trusts to see if conservation easements on land would help us lower the cost of farmland enough to make it affordable for farmers to get on the land.
And how'd that go?
Well, our work over the last 2 years has shown, we worked with one landowner up in La Puebla. Their land, 17 acres, without really any infrastructure on it, came in at about $700,000. if you put a conservation easement on it, it would drop the price to about $400,000, which was helpful. But then we were also experimenting with putting further restrictions to keep it in agriculture. And because we wanted to keep it in agriculture as another easement on top of it, it would have dropped the price to about $150,000. So it's possible to put easements on land to lower the cost of it. And it's also possible for the landowner to retain some of that equity through the state tax credits, through the Federal Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program and other programs, which will give you tax credits and actual cash back for taking development rights off the property.
Yeah, so I was going to say, because who wants to take that big a loss?
Yeah, the landowners would have come out maybe with about $550,000 ultimately in equity on the property from doing all the easements. So it was a really helpful 2 years of working with the landowner to try to see if we could make it work financially for both the landowner and for a farmer. It looks like it does work, and we're actively seeking other landowners who might be interested in doing that.
So what about, as you mentioned a moment ago, young people going into farming? I mean, we had a wonderful documentary a couple of years ago, I think, called The Greenhorns, which is about all these young people who were going back to the family farm that they'd left forever and turned out they wanted to do it, or suburban kids saying, I think I'll do organic farming instead of going into bond trading or whatever.
Right.
That was a beautiful example, but what's the reality?
Well, I think, you know, the reality is, especially in northern New Mexico, it's super hard to grow here. We have, even though we have amazing tributaries that come down from the mountains and come down into, you know, the valleys where the land is much richer, there's not tons of it, number one, which is partially what drives the cost of it up. And then I think, you know, I think culturally people who have been farming for generations, sometimes their younger children don't look at farming as a valued profession. They look at it more as something that comes out of a poverty scenario. And I think part of our work at the market is to really make the market economically a viable place to make a living. What we've found since we built the building in 2008 was that at that time, at 2008, the farmers were grossing about $2 million a year in sales. Now they're grossing about $3.7 million. So what we've found is having a centralized permanent location has really helped farmers, you know, grow their businesses and actually plan, because when we were bopping around from parking lot, it was hard for the community to find them. Their income would go down. So things are kind of stabilizing at the market. Certainly having the opportunity for year-round sales now has helped farmers quite a bit.
And are people showing up? I mean, do you have a good crowd there on Saturday mornings?
Yeah, it's amazing. We probably have at least, I don't know, 1,000 people in, well, maybe, I don't know, 900 people at a time, but it's a five-hour market, so they kind of, you know, shuffle in and out, and certainly the summer market's been, you know, super successful. So I think, you know, part of the issue to bring young people into the profession is to make it really viable to be a farmer and to grow on such a small scale. In northern New Mexico, the farms are, you know, 6 to 9 acres, generally speaking. So it's hard to grow enough to wholesale product, you know, to larger institutions. That direct sales opportunity is really important to make a living.
And then there's water.
Yeah, and the water issue is going to be more and more interesting as we go along. Because we're a snowmelt state, too, or a snowmelt region, climate change, what is probably going to happen is we could have pretty good snowpack in the mountains, but as we've seen, we had super warm fall. Last year, we had the super warm spring, which meant that we had a bump crop of fruit because nothing froze. But the issue is that the water would come off the mountains faster.
And earlier
before the crops are ready. We don't really have sequestration of water to hold on to it until we need it. So there's a lot of issues around trying to hold water till when we need it, maybe trying to use drip irrigation on the fields so that it's a little bit more direct application of water, not so wasteful. But I think it's going to become more and more of an issue as this drought progresses. It's going to be a big deal for the market. And then one of the things that's interesting about this movie that we're showing tonight climate refugees is when you think about the Southwest alone, the Colorado River supplies water to, I think it's currently a little over 30 million people, and it's already over-allocated. And we know that we're in a pretty major drought nationwide. So this concept of climate refugees in Thailand or wherever is actually, it's not far from home. I mean, as things, you know, progress here with the drought, people may find that they need to move to different areas where there's more water. And certainly for the market, it's an issue about, you know, hoping and praying that the farmers are going to be able to bring their crops in. So the Institute does professional development work with farmers. This year we're focusing pretty much primarily on soil health, soil fertility, so that the soil can accept the limited amount of water that's coming down, and also, you know, water issues, how to irrigate more effectively, and other options for farmers in terms of how to capture water for their crops.
To piggyback what Sarah was saying, it is very local. I mean, if we look at New Orleans, if we look at the hurricanes, the storms in the Northeast this past winter, all kinds of climate change that's happening in this state, we're going to feel it more than some other states because of the drought, because it's so hard to ranch, because it's so hard to grow food. And when I talk to people in the Midwest or in the Northeast or in other parts of the country, you know, they still don't have the concept of, you know, us paying attention to water every single day.
Right. They really don't.
They don't, because, you know, they turn on their faucets, they go outside, it's raining, whatever. So this is a very, this issue of climate refugees and what the film is going to show tonight is really facing us here in New Mexico and in the Southwest right now.
Now, you've got a bunch of other films coming up that address similarly vital issues.
We do. You know, 8 years ago when we started the film series, all these films were about food. Food, agriculture, you know, not growing in a monoculture anymore, big ag, organic. And now all the films have shifted because we look through 50 documentaries before we pick 5 each year. And it's all shifted to bigger issues, climate change, sustainability. Let's just have that overarching word, sustainability, for everything. Because what we're seeing now is everything's interrelated. Waste and land and water and lack of water and the politics behind everything. So we are going to be showing 4 more films after tonight, and they're going to, one, February 27th is a locally based film. It's about gas fracking, you know, in Mora and San Miguel counties and the politics behind that and how the citizens, you know, are getting up in arms to fight that.
Yes, they are. They've done an amazing job up there. That film is called Rooted Lands. I hope we get to discuss that one too, because it's supposed to be fantastic.
Yes, it's an amazing film. And then the rest of the season, we're going to talk about GMOs, genetically modified organisms, or genetically engineered food, and how that impacts not only our health, but everything around us and all the systems around us that have to do with food and health and economy. We're also going to talk, we kind of stretched a little. Our April movie is called The Lightbulb Conspiracy, which is really a misnomer. What that's about is planned obsolescence, and what that means is, you know, why does your printer break down after 2 years, and how things are deliberately made to have an end to their life cycle shortly after we purchase them.
A premature end, yes. And this has been going on since, I'm so looking forward to talking about that, because this has been going on since the 1950s.
And even earlier, since the 1920s,
film
points out. Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
And books have been written on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was wide out in the open, this planned obsolescence approach, way back. And now it's kind of kept under covers again. And in May, we're going to talk about, it's a film called Edible City. And it's an amazing movement that's happening in parts of California right now, but in urban areas, and it can be replicated anywhere. You may have heard of food deserts where people are living in higher poverty areas and there isn't a grocery store. There isn't fresh food.
Right.
They're going to fast food stores and corner stores and just buying packaged goods. So this film's about how to use every square inch of land to grow good food, but more than that, how to generate business and employ people and get healthy food to people in these food deserts by looking at the urban culture and what we can do with that.
So lots of amazing films coming up at the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute Wednesday film series. It's, what did you say, the third Wednesday?
It's the third or fourth Wednesday of the month, and we'll have the brochures ready and out to the public very soon.
Excellent.
But folks can go on our website and check them all out at this point with the dates, and that's farmersmarketinstitute.org.
Farmersmarketinstitute.org. Now, Sarah Noss, you have been the director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute for some years, and you are going to be moving on soon.
I am. In March, I'm going to be moving on to take a little break. But it's been a really fantastic 8 years at the Institute. When I came on in 2005, the farmers were bopping around from parking lot to parking lot, and the issue was the development of the rail yard and whether or not the market was going to be able to secure a spot downtown or be pushed to the outskirts of town. So it's been a really great job in terms of addressing that issue and trying to get the market stabilized in a downtown location, which I think we can say we have now.
I think you can say that.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing building, and it's centrally located, and if you're trying to drive along that street on a Saturday morning, you can't miss it.
Yeah, it's been really wonderful, and I remember when then-Governor Richardson brought the rail runner down into the rail yard area, which was super exciting because I think, you know, the market is also benefiting from the fact that people from Albuquerque can come up on Saturday mornings. There's always a little surge of people.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do they come up for the Santa Fe Farmers Market from Albuquerque?
Yeah, they sure do, especially in the wintertime because, most of the markets around, all the markets around the state are seasonal except for ours now. So, we have the advantage of having a year-round venue, which is really fantastic.
Sarah Noss is director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market, and Joanne Smoger does events and outreach and the film series. It's farmersmarketinstitute.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. And what time is the film tonight?
The film starts at 7 p.m.
And it's at the Farmers Market building, which is right on the corner of, it's on Paseo de Peralta near Guadalupe.
Across the street from Site Santa Fe. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay. Well, thank you for being on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you. Pleasure.